This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about stigma and health conditions. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. When there is an outbreak of a new and dangerous disease, there's often a quest to identify where exactly this disease came from. What's the origin? A lot of times, it's an important step in figuring out how the illness is spreading, how we can stop it. But more often than not, it becomes a bit of a witch hunt. Can we find the person who started this whole thing? The one who got us all sick? We see examples of this all throughout history, like Typhoid Mary, a New York City cook named Mary Mallon, who was identified as the source of several typhoid fever outbreaks. She was forced to quarantine in isolation and died in a hospital. Her name has become synonymous with spreading disease. In modern times, we've come to use a more clinical-sounding term that gets to the same concept. Grant Hill traces the origin of that term.
Spring, 1982. Epidemic intelligence officers are almost a year into a troubling investigation. Residents of three major American cities are dying young, really young. Most are gay men. A handful of CDC officials are tasked with finding out why. They crisscross the country, interviewing patients, looking for patterns. Are bad drugs to blame? Something environmental?
When reports came of a number of cases that seemed to have sexual contact with one another, they realized that this would offer support for a viral agent.
That's researcher and historian Richard McKay.
The notion that whatever was causing it could be transmitted sexually and that this could help with their investigations.
Interviews in Los Angeles reveal a number of these cases are connected through sexual contact.
This was the formation of the cluster, the so-called cluster.
The CDC gets deeper into this cluster research, linking one case to the next, hoping it will eventually lead to the, quote, source, whatever unknown viral agent is at the center of this growing, miserable web. Before long, a number of cases are connected by sexual contact with one person, a Canadian flight attendant known to the CDC as Case 57, one of the few cases researchers had previously seen outside of New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Researchers track down Case 57, ask him about who he slept with. The flight attendant wants to help. He opens his personal address book, shares all the information he has on who he's been with during his travels, over 70 names. It's not nearly a complete list, but it's a start, one that allows investigators to keep connecting dots, identify what might be causing these illnesses.
The CDC's cluster study was mostly finished by the autumn of 1982.
The study is reviewed internally, prepared for publication. But during this process, terminology changes. Subjects of the study are no longer referred to as cases. They become patients. Then, a version of the report, annotated by hand, assigns a number to each patient, depending on the city they're from. But Case 57, the flight attendant, he's not from any of those cities. So he doesn't get a number. Instead, he's given a letter, O, short for Out of California. Thanks to his location, patient O doesn't fit neatly within any of the city clusters illustrated in the study's diagram, so he's placed in the center of it. Eventually, the report is typed up.
It was finally published in March of 1984.
After this, something weird starts to happen. The researchers who wrote the report, they continue to refer to this flight attendant as patient O, but others, including some within the CDC, they start calling him something different.
Patient O became patient zero. It seems through a combination of understandable reading errors and possibly also the similarity of O and zero on the typewriters used at the CDC.
Zero, like a starting point or the center of a web.
Before this specific case, the phrase patient zero did not exist.
Now, the term patient zero is used all the time. It has come to represent the first. Be it a plague or a trend, patient zero usually refers to one individual who is the origin. Richard wrote a book about all this, The Origin of This Origin, called Patient Zero and the Making of the AIDS Epidemic. In it, he tells the story of the first patient zero, Gaetan Dugas, the flight attendant at the center of the CDC's cluster study. His name and identity first became known to the world through the work of journalist Randy Schiltz and his international bestseller, And the Band Played On, which came out in 1987. The book was seen as the definitive history of the early days of the AIDS epidemic, a history that leaned heavily into the CDC's cluster study and the idea that Dugas had a central role in the epidemic's origin.
I'm probably nuts, but I'm on my way to New York to try and find a very sexually active French-Canadian airline steward.
The book was enormously popular, nominated for awards, eventually even made into a movie.
Mr. Dugas, have you had sex with any of these people?
Is that what I'm here for, to talk about my beautiful lovers?
In the story that Schiltz wrote, where he identified Gaetan Dugas by name, he combined a number of different elements that the older historical impetus to find an early case had existed separately, but he brought them together in a really dramatic form.
Richard says Schiltz portrayed the flight attendant as a devilishly handsome, recklessly sexual super spreader. The labeling fluke at the CDC provided an all-too-pithy, almost metaphysical confirmation that Dugas was singularly to blame for AIDS.
You know, I adore doctors, but I must say, if it is an epidemic, this gay plague thing, it's your fault for not stopping it, not mine.
But this story was far from the truth. The incubation period of HIV made it highly unlikely Dugas gave the virus to all of those he was connected to in the cluster study. And at the same time the book And the Band Played On was released in 1987, the same month, more information was coming out that should have slowed down this patient zero narrative around Dugas.
A kind of medical detective in a cramped closet filled with odds and ends.
Tissue samples that had been taken from a St. Louis teenager almost two decades earlier had now been reanalyzed and had tested positive for HIV. The samples came from Robert Rayford, an African-American boy who died in 1969. He had come down with a mysterious combination of symptoms, so mysterious that his doctors stowed away tissue samples for further study. By 1987, researchers claimed those samples tested positive for HIV.
Researchers may be saying hello to a new but not inconsistent theory about the spread of the disease. Generally accepted.
Writer and AIDS organizer Ted Kerr had been looking into the story of Robert Rayford for years and even spent a summer in Rayford's hometown where he tried to trace this history.
And I really thought that I would go to St. Louis and there would just be a wealth of knowledge about Robert Rayford waiting for me. I thought I would go.
Some sort of museum exhibit, archives, a plaque, something.
But in fact, the opposite was true. I would say that first visit, which was in 2016, I didn't find one person who had heard of him.
Ted started asking around. Rayford was a remarkably private person, but Ted eventually discovered where the boy lived, where he was buried. He found his death certificate and started searching for other materials.
School records are hard to find. I've searched yearbooks to find him or his brother.
Ted was obsessed. Another disease detective on the trail of HIV. Still, the whole time during his big search, something stuck in Ted's head. Advice he received from when he first started looking into Robert Rayford.
During that first summer of research, I was posting things on Instagram as I was discovering things, like the 1987 headline that confirmed Robert's death. And I had a friend who is an AIDS activist in Canada just message me privately and say, be careful, don't turn Robert into the new patient zero.
Ted knew the label could spell trouble, even if the person was no longer around to hear it. Although flight attendant Gaetan Dugas died before anyone knew him as patient zero, the publication of Randy Schiltz's And the Band Played On brought on a tsunami of suffering for Dugas' family.
Schiltz and his publisher did not contact Dugas' family before the book came out, and so they were very much hit with a wave of negative publicity and huge amounts of media interest, requests for interviews.
Historian Richard McKay says a slew of international headlines followed the book's publication, dubbing Dugas a monster, the Columbus of AIDS, placing responsibility for the entire epidemic on the man who flew too much. Journalists suggested he refused medical attention and instead opted to have sex with as many people as possible. His widowed mother and siblings, all exhausted, pleaded for an end to the, quote, web of untruths.
Huge stigmatization for being the family members of the man blamed for introducing the most deadly new epidemic in North America in decades.
Claims of Robert Rayford's HIV-positive tissue samples taken from well over a decade prior did little to slow the anger aimed at Dugas. But in smaller circles, a new round of speculation was sparked. Speculation aimed at Rayford.
There's ways in which people try to claim Robert as gay.
Here's Ted Kerr again.
Or maybe try to connect him to conspiracy theories that were happening around lead poisoning in St. Louis or underground child prostitution rings in St. Louis. And I think all of those are not helpful. They're understandable, but they're not helpful.
Especially considering that not everyone includes Rayford in the history of HIV.
The medical community does not embrace his story because of the way that his story unfolded.
Somehow, the press reported on Rayford's HIV diagnosis before the results appeared in a peer-reviewed publication, which has led some to question the veracity of those tests. There's also the fact that those results have never been replicated, and likely never will be.
The saved tissues were destroyed during Hurricane Katrina, so no more scientific investigation can be done on the material that came from Robert's body.
At this point, we don't know exactly when HIV entered the United States, or exactly how it got here. New research suggests the virus may have entered New York as early as 1970. Still, Ted remains interested in the case of Robert Rayford, a boy best known for his death and what it may reveal. Not so much about the boy, but about all of us.
If he had not been a black teenager, if he had been a white person or somebody older, would the alarm bells that began the AIDS crisis response in America, would they have rung in 1969 when he died if he had not been a black teenager? So I think the medical community also doesn't want to wrestle with those questions.
That story was reported by Grant Hill.